This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things food with your favorite chefs, food influencers, and Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have an Iron Chef from Philly on the podcast to talk about his recent return to competing and evolving with the industry while maintaining your culinary voice. But before we get into today's episode, just wanted to let you guys know we will be taking a short break, but we will be back with new episodes on September 29th. Now to today's episode. He is a chef, celebrated restaurateur, James Beard Award winner, and a recent competitor on Bobby's Triple Threat, it's Jose Garces. Jose, welcome to the podcast. I think the last time I saw you, we were doing a virtual cooking event during COVID. How have you been since?
Been great. Yeah, just having fun cooking, competing, you know, being a dad, and yeah, just generally enjoying life.
Well, that's what it's all about. And we're definitely going to get into some of your recent competitions. In fact, when you walked on the set of TOC this past season, you had the chefs shaking in their aprons for good reason. What was your experience like on TOC?
Wow. It was pretty wild. I would say, you know, definitely a much different format than Iron Chef, and one that kind of really levels the playing field. You know, as an Iron Chef, I feel like we had some distinct advantages over the competitors, whether it was like kitchen familiarity or just, you know, being in the heat of competition on a regular basis. I felt like there was always an edge. In this case, in TOC, it's really just, you know, the randomizer, your mind, your ability to create on the fly. And it's pretty, you know, it's pretty wild.
Would you do it again if asked?
Yeah, I would. You know, I felt like I was just kind of, you know, scratching the surface, kind of, you know, dusting off some rust, getting into the flow. And yeah, so yeah, I would definitely welcome the challenge one more time.
Well, as you mentioned, you are just one of a handful of chefs who can call themselves an Iron Chef. I got to bug you a little bit in Kitchen Stadium during Iron Chef Showdown. If you could point to one quality you have that kind of has propelled you to that elite level, what would it be?
I think, you know, the thing that I have, I think, is just calmness under pressure, just kind of staying cool and realizing that, you know, keeping a clear head and being able to strategize and cook on the fly just is an advantage. If you're flustered or if you're overwhelmed or if you panic, you know, you might not do so well.
Where does that calmness come from?
I don't know. I just think maybe upbringing, maybe just being in the restaurant business, you know, it's a pretty can be volatile, can be like stressful. And so, yeah, I think just life experiences have brought me to this point.
Let's talk about your career in the restaurant business. We'll get into more competition talk in a little bit, but you are a seasoned veteran, both on TV and in restaurants. What are some of the ways that you kind of stay flexible to continue evolving alongside the industry?
Well, I think that is the beauty of the industry. And when I got into cooking, when I got into hospitality, it's what I realized at an early age from the time I entered culinary school, and I had not been in the industry, but when I entered school and just kind of like understanding, wow, I can be on a cruise line. I can work in a hotel. I can be a caterer. I can be a restaurant chef. There's just so much. I could, do a fast casual concept. There's just so many different avenues to get involved in. And that was almost 30 years ago. So
wow.
since then, I've dabbled in just about all of it and have had so much fun. And really the key is evolving and staying current on trends. I try to, I pride myself on, food investigating, traveling, being inspired, and then coming back to my home base and creating. Mm-hmm. And that's what keeps it fun and interesting.
What is inspiring you right now, or what's inspired you over the years?
Well, usually, a lot of my inspirations do come from travel, and I have this, I have a brand that's going to be 18, Amada. It's our Spanish tapas restaurant. We opened it in 2005. I recently, this summer, did an R&D trip back to Spain along with a hike. So I did the Camino de Santiago. I did a few stages of that in northern Spain, and then traveled to San Sebastian in Barcelona. And the food and culture of Spain is I think it's special. It's great to be able to be inspired by that country and those regions and bring those food ideas back to Philly. So I opened a third version of Amada in the suburbs here of it's at Radnor Wayne, Pennsylvania. And yeah, it's been great. Just a lot of fun.
I mean, talking about Amada, as you mentioned, it opened in 2005. I remember eating there, in 2010 when I was covering the Giants during the NLCS, and it was already like a mainstay and a hot spot. And as you mentioned, you're 18 years in now on that particular establishment. To what do you attribute, the longevity of your restaurants?
I would just say commitment to quality. The business can be tough, and you have to perform every day. It's a competitive landscape. There's other chefs, other restaurants who are, trying to do their best. And so really it's a daily commitment to excellence. And you have to, you have to kind of be vigilant about that. I think we're also evolving. We're always looking for fresh ingredients. What are the local makers producing? What's new and exciting from Spain that we can bring in? And yeah, it's constant. And again, if you love what you do, it never feels like work. It just feels like, hey, this is where we need to be. We need to be doing.
But your culinary concepts are diverse. It's not just, Spanish food. You've got American fare at Village Whiskey and just have done a number of different things over the years. How do you approach developing diverse restaurant concepts while also maintaining your own culinary identity?
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of the business. And if you're a creative person, which I consider myself creative, it's a great outlet to do and explore. I've had, the good fortune to do anything from a Japanese izakaya, an Argentinian grill concept, a Cuban diner, you name it. And that part has been so much fun. And we, the thing is that we archive, we sit on data that we have. And so when there is, part of our business is, F&B solutions. So if somebody needs a concept, well, hey, we have it in our pocket to like deploy. And that to me has been the fun part of it. I've been able to develop myself as a chef, as a versatile chef. And again, while still holding true to my Latin roots, that's always going to be there. That was my decision in getting into the business was, I think after I'd cooked for about 10 years, I decided that I really needed to specialize and really, you know, stand out in a category. Looked around the Latin landscape and also looked at myself and said, hey, this kind of makes sense. So yeah, just went down the Latin road, and literally I have my cookbook's called The Latin Road Home, because it all kind of roads come back to my Latin roots. And so, yeah, it's been quite a journey.
Why is that so important to you to have those roots reflected in the food that you cook, no matter what the cuisine is?
Yeah, well, you know, my parents, gosh, they instilled it in me at an early age. They had immigrated from Ecuador in the late 1960s. I was born in an Ecuadorian American household. And while we were assimilating and they were assimilating to Chicago and, you know, and just kind of being Americans, they were also still cooking foods from home, from Ecuador. So it was a nice kind of mix. Growing up. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, your childhood memories and things that happen at an early age really impact you throughout your adult years. And yeah, I'm a product of that for sure.
What are some of those, you know, early memories that you can, that like come to mind when you think about, you know, that Ecuadorian cuisine and the smells and those things that you remember from childhood?
Yeah. I mean, my mom and both my grandma were great cooks. They were in the kitchen a lot. And so some early memories might be arepas, white corn cakes filled with cheese. Those they made for me. I made them for them. I made them for my kids. We still make them every day as a breakfast staple. So that's one that the traditions have continued. Outside of that, like classic, like empanadas, ceviches. My dad was like, loved the grill. So he was always concocting like crazy marinades to put on put on steaks and chicken. He actually has one that he still like swears by. He's like, you know, if you put papaya into a marinade, into particularly like a beef marinade, there's something, the enzymes in the papaya really break it down and make tender. And so, you know, those were my early lessons growing up. It's like, okay. Yeah.
Do you use the papaya in any of your marinades now?
I do. From time to time, it does make an appearance, and mostly for like events or special menu items. But yeah, and I'll tell you what, it works. It really does. It like so yeah, if you're looking for a tender cut of beef on the grill, use some papaya.
All right. I love that. I'm gonna try that. I mean, would you say your family then was kind of the biggest influence on shaping your culinary style, or was there somebody else along the way?
Well, I think that the early food memories were very pleasant and, you know, warm and obviously, you know, comforting. Later on, when I got to New York, so I'd gone to cooking school, and it's funny enough, I went to cooking school because honestly, I just needed a job. I went to get a trade. I went to get, you know, a vocation trade. I'm like, you know what, Jose, you got to start like earning here. And so it wasn't until cooking school that I discovered that I actually had talent in the kitchen. It was, you know, and competition actually started then. So my first like semester, first block, what we called it I went to Kendall College in Chicago. Right away, you know, we were given trays of ingredients and mise en place and, you know, hey guys, you know, make Dover sole. And so everyone's rushing, everyone's filleting their fish and making their sauce. And here I am, like, I'm, you know, kind of outperforming my classmates. And I'm like, oh, hey, I'm done faster. My food looks better. Oh, this is great. So that, you know, that discovery was pretty tremendous for me, because then, you know, I realized, whoa, again, there's a lot of opportunity in the industry, and I think I've got some talent. So from there, I cooked in Spain as just kind of a European experience. I wanted to get that under my belt because I was French classically trained at school. Cooked in New York. I met a chef, mentor, a good friend of mine. His name is Doug Rodriguez. At the time, he was the godfather of Nuevo Latino cuisine, is what his term was. And so, so I gained a lot of influence from him just on the food side of things. He brought me to Philly to work with a restaurateur, Steve Starr. And Steve was a great businessman at a really nice organization that he was growing. So during that period, when I worked with Steven and Douglas, it was about a 4 or 5 year stretch, I had the best of both worlds. I had a great culinary mentor and a great business mind that was teaching me that side of the whole equation. And yeah, that really, you know, that really formed quite a bit for me and my career going forward.
When you talk about that moment of realization, like, I have something here. I can do this. I'm good at this. You know, what switched in your brain, you know, from just like enjoying and appreciating food and maybe it's going to be a job for you to like, I'm going to be top of my, you know, profession in this world?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Jamie. I think you guys have the title right. Obsessed. I just became obsessed with food and I became, it was like consuming me. I couldn't stop thinking about it. Once I got going, I'm like, you know, why am I, you know, dreaming of lamb chops when I'm going to bed? You know, like, what is going on here? So that, you know, something definitely clicked. And then for me, I was motivated to, you know, I was motivated by lifestyle. Like, you know, I had student loans to pay, and I was like, okay, I'm also going to like, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to learn the best that I can. I'm going to, you know, live a good life, you know? And so, and as I got into the field, it's funny, I started realizing that, you know, it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of physical work. It's pretty, you know, long hours on your feet. And then, you know, really once I got into that part of my career and just learning how to become a chef, I started, at that point is when I really started to realize, okay, I need a strategy on how to, you know, be intact in 5 years, you know, still, and still do what I love to do. And so, yeah, there was a whole period of time when that kind of thinking and strategy was happening as well.
And as you're kind of moving from place to place, Chicago to New York, and then eventually landing in Philly, what about Philadelphia just felt like home to you? Why have you stayed there for so long?
Yeah. It's a special place here. What can I tell you? So I got to Philly, you know, after cooking in New York almost 5 years, and I looked around the New York landscape and there was all these stalwarts chefs that, you know, honestly are still there holding it down. Whether, you know, you talk about like Jean-Georges, Danielle, quite a few like culinary legends that were just in New York and also, you know, honestly, to open your own business. And, you know, I was and that was the aspiration I had. I'm like, wow, it's going to be tough to do this in New York. And so got the opportunity to come to Philly and it was very fortuitous. It wasn't, Philadelphia was not on my radar. But once I had worked here for a few years and developed a following and developed some loyalty around the community, just liked my cooking. I had two restaurants with Stephen and Douglas, Alma de Cuba and Elvez. So I spent almost 5 years cooking in those spots. And when it became time to open my own place, I did consider going back to New York or Chicago or even Miami, but ultimately found a location here in Philly that is Amada. And yeah, like I said, 18 years later, it's still humming, doing. And Philly's also, you know, I raised my children here. I have a 20-year-old and a 16-year-old. It's Wow. been a great place, great community of people to do that. And yeah, I mean, we're like most major cities, we're having a moment right now, but I'm hopeful that, yeah, the cities and all the cities kind of pull through in a better way coming up here.
Yeah. How would you describe, you know, the culinary community there as a whole? Like, is it very welcoming? Is it a family? Is it, you know, how would you describe it?
Well, you know, it's funny because I'm old and I've been here a long time, you know, it's one of these things. Like I would say I'm an anomaly in many ways in our industry, and especially in one town. Almost 23 years, I've had like several different iterations. And you spoke to it earlier. You have to keep reinventing yourself to stay current. But I've seen, being here that long, I've kind of seen all the waves and patterns of chefs and culinary trends and neighborhood builds. I would say that the talent that's here in Philly is really high. There's a lot of good chefs that are opening up and have places here in different pockets, different neighborhoods. And, you know, Philly makes it easy to do business. So you do attract a lot of talent down here, but it's growing. It continues to grow. And I would say, boy, pre-pandemic, I remember thinking, looking up at the end of 2019 and saying, wow, this, like, the landscape is so competitive right now. Like, I can't believe how many people are opening. There's only so much market share, but it's like, hey, it's hot. People were coming to town to eat and have those culinary experiences. So I think on the backside of COVID, and we're still, even though, you know, it feels like it's been done for a minute here. We're still kind of, as a whole, the industry is still, I would say, still in recovery mode, especially in Philly. Yeah.
Do you feel like, though, it's like on the rise, it's on the up and up, it's getting sort of getting back to those pre-pandemic levels?
Yeah. I mean, I think a few dynamics need to occur. I think, you know, whether folks want to believe it or not, you know, the office workers are still not back fully. Mm-hmm. I think it's still probably at, like, you know, 40 or 50%. And so that has a big impact on cities, you know, whether it's lunch, happy mm-hmm. hour, events, it's, you know, 20-25% of the business. So that needs to continue to improve or not, we'll just say, hey, this is the new level. This is what we're resetting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think as a whole, there's some, like, civic duties and responsibilities that need to happen from a, like, just crime and safety perspective. Mm-hmm. Just make everyone feel like, hey, you know, if I live in the burbs, come into town on Friday and Saturday feels like a night out, mm-hmm. and they need to feel safe about it. And so that will continue to improve, hopefully. And when those two dynamics kind of settle down, then I think we'll see things really come back in a big way.
Well, speaking of which, you're certainly doing your part as well. You started the Garces Foundation that provides services and education for Philadelphia's most underserved populations. What has that work meant to you and your career, your legacy?
That's been very, very gratifying work. You know, this community, it's mostly restaurant workers, construction workers, folks. There's a few pockets of Philly where they just don't have access to health benefits. Or we also, one of our programs is an EREL program, which is just a literacy program through job training. And so, you know, all that work, it's you look around, it feels like necessary. Like, if people need help. And mm-hmm. so I think it's been, you know, really gratifying. We have a small board, a pretty big budget, and it's, you know, every year it's, okay, how do we get there? But, you know, we're 11 years into it. Yes, you know, I think I'm hopeful that we can take our programs nationally at one point. That's kind of the goal.
That'd be amazing. What would you tell, you know, young, fresh-faced Jose, who was right out of culinary school back in the late 90s, about what was in store for him?
Oh, wow. That's, you know what, Jamie, nobody's ever asked me that question. It's a good one, because I might have to sit down with young Jose and have, like, a deep conversation about a lot of things. So yeah, I mean, you got me on that one. I think it would be a very heartfelt, sincere, maybe over, like, you know, a big dinner and maybe a bottle of wine or two. I don't know.
couple at least. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what I would tell young Jose is to, you know, be mindful and present, be more aware, be more mm-hmm. conscious of your actions and what you do and, you know, your words, just kind of more on the mindfulness things. Cause when I think about my early years, like my 20s and even 30s, I was actually, it's funny, I was thinking about it. I was just, like, walking around unconscious, just, like, doing and not really.
Not a care in the world.
Yeah. I think I'd start there and then get into the other details with a finer tooth comb later on.
When we come back, Jose gives his tips for cooking competitively and later reveals if he'd ever rematch Bobby Flay. So stick around.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Well, I'm sure he wouldn't have believed you or imagined that he would be a celebrated competitor on so many Food Network shows. We touched on TOC and Iron Chef, also Guy's Grocery Games and the latest Bobby's Triple Threat. What got you into competition in the first place?
Wow. Well, I was an athlete growing up. I was a football player and a wrestler, and I did that, you know, throughout my formative years. And I don't know. There's something about it. And you know, it just kind of, it carries over into cooking, right? Like from the get-go. We spoke earlier about like culinary school and like, you know, the first day of class or second day of class, we're asked to like produce something or, you know, and it, all of a sudden it's like we're running around the kitchen. Everyone's trying to do their best. And then you get into the business world and it becomes competitive. Mm-hmm. You know, whose tapas are better than the other? Who's Latin food? And it just continues. And I think it's societal. I think it's cultural, but at the core, I love to compete. I'm a competitor. It's great. And it's so much fun to doing it on a platform or, you know, kind of in cooking. You know, it's fun to compete in other things, but as it relates to like my craft and what I do, it clicks right in for me.
Yeah. And I think the newest, you know, iteration of these competition shows with Bobby's Triple Threat is super interesting to me just because it is like this gauntlet that you kind of have to go through to get to the end of the show, essentially. What was it like going up against, you know, Bobby's culinary titans on Triple Threat? And who made you the most nervous?
Well, Jamie, you know, the way I look at it is, I made them the most nervous.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. That's why you're so good. That's the mindset you bring into it, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think they all had their own different styles, which I appreciate. And, you know, at the end of the day, cooking competitions and kind of the way they've developed formatting, it's just, I mean, there's just a lot of creativity going on right now in terms of like, what kind of positions can we put these chefs in and and let's see if they can get their way out of it. And so it does feel like there is a lot of like, there's more like twists and turns and a little more like, you know, kind of like just strategy that needs to be involved. You know, the Titans, they were great. They were great to compete against. And, you know, I think they all have their own unique styles. So I think the thing to do though is when you're cooking competitively is just stick to your, don't try to match. Because you'll probably lose. You'll probably lose points in that. So I always, my strategy is, you know, do my food the best that I can do it and yeah, hope for a good outcome.
Do you tend to play it safe and just like, like you said, like cook what you like know and love, or do you take those calculated risks when you're under pressure like that?
I think that it's usually ingredient or task based where you might have to take a more calculated risk. You know, and here's the thing about, I would say, competition is sometimes it's about whose dish is the most creative and who's the best, right? Who really went outside and really executed the right way. Sometimes the challenge is so hard. It's about who makes the least amount of mistakes, right?
True.
So if you're in a battle where both chefs are kind of struggling to figure out like, okay, what is then, and that's hard. That's unknown to the one or the other chefs. But if you have that, then you're just really, the safe play is okay. You know, if you have like, let's say if you have like a really like random odd ingredient that, you know, both chefs are not in their wheelhouse, then yeah, you just want to apply the cooking techniques that you feel you can execute on.
And on that note, I mean, how do you weave kind of like what we talked about earlier, your Ecuadorian roots, those influences, you know, from your heritage into your dishes, and why is that important in a, you know, a competition like that?
Well, I think the thing that I can bring is that Latin heritage, Latin mm-hmm. kind of inspirations. And I find that a lot of the competitors aren't in that category. So right away, it helps me stand out a little bit from a flavor profile. Mm-hmm. And what I'll do, though, is I may throw in some like Asian inspirations, or I may throw some European inspirations to it and kind of do a hybrid mix of the two. That's really representative of my cooking style is mm-hmm. since I was French classically trained, I have that kind of like those roots are like deep rooted. And then the layers of inspirations come on top of that. And so that's kind of, you know, that's my secret, guys. Don't tell anybody else. No.
Don't tell anybody. The Titans, if you're listening. If you could create one dish, you know, without like any other outside like rules or stipulations that really tells your story as a chef, what would that dish be?
Oh, that's a good one. And, you know, I think for me, what's deep rooted is, you know, I love Spanish paellas. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, and I've made some on cooking competitions. I've made some for my friends, family. I make them in the restaurants. I just think there's something special about, you know, one, the rice, the vehicle that carries all the ingredients. I like mm-hmm. that it's also versatile. It has a lot of versatility in terms of, you know, how you feel. And it has a lot of deep-rooted flavor in the stock or broth that you cook the rice in. And I just think it's also a bit of a melting pot. There's, mm-hmm. you know, you can have, you know, seafood, beef, veggies, bread, starches, aiolis. It just has a lot of different textures. And so, yeah, I would say that kind of represents me pretty well.
I think so. I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, speaking of triple threat, Bobby's a big paella guy as well. And I know you've competed against him on Iron Chef, also on Beat Bobby Flay. Would there ever be another rematch in the works between you two?
I would love to rematch him in battle paella, because we did that on Beat Bobby Flay. And he didn't actually make a paella. He made a risotto and then plated it. I made a paella. They got me like my Sakurat, which was, you know, I literally just had to like let the rice burn it for a second at the bottom. Just to get it crispy. So yeah, I would challenge Bobby at Battle Paella one more time.
All right, Bobby, if you're listening, Jose is putting you on the spot. Paella, let's put it down on the books. This has been so fun, you know, catching up with you and chatting. We're going to finish things off with a little rapid fire. And then we have one final question that we ask everybody here on the podcast.
Sounds good.
All right, rapid fire round. You get to pick one thing from your spice cabinet. What is it?
Smoked paprika.
Ooh, good one. You have an idea for a new restaurant. What is the first thing you do?
Travel to a destination, an inspiration destination.
All right. If I weren't a chef, I'd be blank. What?
I'd be a lobster fisherman.
I love that. Where? Anywhere in particular?
Off the coast of Maine.
Yeah, of course. That's where you got to go for that.
I might be heading there anyway, guys, at some point.
Well, we love that. We love Maine. Your favorite day off thing to do in Philly?
Favorite day off thing to do is, people may not know this, I do enjoy the game of golf. So 4 hours outside, swinging the club mindlessly feels pretty good to me.
What's your handicap?
My handicap, I'm like a 19.
Okay.
Yeah, right. still work in progress, but yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about my game this year. So okay. Things are progressing.
All right. Best place to get a cheesesteak in Philly?
Well, the best place to get a cheesesteak in about 1 month is going to be at the Wells Fargo Stadium, because I have a stand there called Garces Eats.
Okay.
And at Garces Eats, I was challenged to create elevated stadium food. Jose, give us a menu with your best at elevated stadium food, a menu that rotates. So last week, I made a Wagyu beef cheesesteak with caramelized onions, truffle, provolone fondue. You gotta go get it there.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
that
we're going
sounds
there.
Like a flavor bomb. I love
Boom.
That.
Boom. Yes.
And also, you know, catch a game while you're at it. So that's
catch a game.
Perfect combo. If you could create your own ice cream flavor, what would it be?
Well, I am a traditionalist. I love a good strawberry ice cream. But, you know, local, maybe unpasteurized, I'm not sure. Like the milk needs to be creamy. If you have high quality milk, obviously you're going to get a better quality ice cream. Fresh strawberries. Really, you know, that's the strawberry ice cream I want. Rich, creamy, with nice pops of fresh fruit.
Okay. That sounds super refreshing. The most important career lesson that you've learned?
Oh, most important career lesson. Don't get in front of your skis. You know? Yeah. Don't put the cart before the horse. All of these cliches. With success breeds opportunity, but not all that opportunity is always good. So you have to, you know, kind of take your time and really weigh and measure any decisions going forward.
All right. I like that. All right. Our last question is not rapid fire. You can take as long as you want on this one. And it's a very simple question, but what would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So we're talking like, take us through breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert, if you're a dessert guy. There's no rules, so you can travel, time travel, spend as much money as you want. Anybody can cook these meals, alive or dead. There's no rules.
Oh,
it's your day.
Wow, Jamie. Wow. you're going there.
Yeah.
So to me, you know, recently in terms of, you know, health, I've been doing some intermittent fasting.
Okay.
And that feels good for me. So I eat on an 8-hour window from 11 to 7 these days. And that, again, for my body, it's been great. So my first meal usually starts at noon, which is great, which is flexible then. It could either be breakfast or
lunch.
There
you go.
Right? Right. So my ultimate breakfast is honestly, to me, I just love like a 3-egg, smoked sausage, smoked bacon, hash browns. Honestly, I'm pretty happy with that.
I mean, it sounds perfect.
Yeah, right? And then, so the mornings usually is like some sort of exercise walk, a hike, a yoga, whatever. So that I start my day. And then usually no snacks lately. So I'm going in real time here. You know, my favorite dinner, favorite, like kind of like in a health oriented way is just great sushi, like amazing, you know? And so I would do, gosh, I mean, there's a place called QB Sushi in Tokyo, where I had one of my most memorable sushi counter experiences. And that to me is the cleanest. It's the most rich and satisfying experience you could have when a sushi chef is, you know, pulling the rice out and it's nice and warm. It's got the vinegar and you've got the highest quality fish going right on top. I don't need much else. That like does it for me. Guilty pleasure. So if I'm breaking my fast, I'm having a late night, I might have some pizza at the end of the night.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I'm a Chicago guy. I really like tavern style pizza. So there's a place in Chicago called Vito and Nick's. And
I've heard.
that might be the like late night spot. And just have like, and so I've have, yeah.
What kind of pizza? I mean, like, what kind of toppings?
I'm a sauce, Italian sausage, hand-ripped sausage, and mushroom guy. I get both of those things. I'm pretty good. And I've actually, I've been anti-pepperoni lately.
Really?
I feel like every pizza is now, when you order pepperoni, it's like, it's all pepperoni. It's like the whole thing. It's like, guys, I want to be able to taste the sauce, the cheese, you know? So anyway, that's where I'm at with pies.
All right. Well, it sounds like a perfect food day, mostly clean food day as well. But no, it sounds delicious. And once again, thank you so much for taking the time.
Awesome, Jamie. Thank you for having me. So much fun.
You can catch Jose on the latest episode of Bobby's Triple Threat on Tuesday, September 12th at 9 p.m. Eastern. Make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies after a short break. Once again, we'll be back with new episodes September 29th.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.